Hello, my name is Darren Doyle, and my favorite thing is recording music.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites. It's Sunday, October 24th. It's sunny in Chicago. There's the nice sounds of fall ball being played outside of my apartment. Maybe it's rugby. I haven't looked outside yet. This has been a good week. I got back to work, started healing up from my onchoplasty that happened last week. So I'm definitely feeling better, spending more time awake than asleep. So I think that's a good thing. And got all good marks from my plastic surgeon so far. This was a nice week without, it was kind of like my only week without doctor's appointments until the end of January. So I really enjoyed that as well. This week on the podcast, we have author Darren Doyle. He's a professor and his new novel is called The Beast in Aisle 34. It is available now. We have a really fun conversation about recording studios and we listened to a little Pink Floyd. So if you need to go into your archives and pull out some Pink Floyd records, know that we've got a little Pink Floyd chat coming up. Not the main focus, but despite having grown up across the hallway from my brother who loved Pink Floyd and played it through our shared heating vent constantly, he pulls up a song that I didn't know about. Looking to the week ahead, I am trying to get my COVID booster. I'm allowed to get it now, but it's just a little difficult to figure out if I'm supposed to schedule it or do a walk-in or whatever. So I'm working on getting my COVID booster. I got my flu shot last week. And then this week I get my port put in so that chemo can start in about 2 weeks, which is a pretty, it's taken a long time to get here. And so I am happy to finally be at this point. So enjoy this conversation with Darren Doyle. Thank you to Dave Kustin for editing this week, and wash your hands, wear a mask, and keep enjoying your favorite things. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and we get recommendations without using an algorithm. This evening, I am joined by Darren Doyle. Darren is an author and professor. He teaches at Central Michigan University, and he's joining us tonight from the great state of Michigan, but I don't know where on the mitten he is. Darren, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing great. Thank you.
I mean, it was a big assumption that you are actually in Michigan tonight. So I don't even know if that's true.
Not too much of a stretch. I'm right dead center of the mitten. If you hold your right hand out
okay.
and point to like the absolute center, that's about where I am, give or take a few miles.
That seems like a good place for Central Michigan University
to be. Exactly. That's the name. Yeah.
Yes. Great. How is your fall? Are your students coming back on campus?
Yeah, everybody's back. You know, almost all the classes are face-to-face. And we, you know, everybody wears masks and yeah, so far, knock on wood, it's going well. I'm so happy to have students back in the classroom. I'll tell you that. That's so much better. So
now your bio ends with, I know how, or he knows what skeletons do. So do you, are you a biology professor or are you a writing professor?
I am a writing professor.
Okay.
I can tell you where that came from if you want.
Please do. I feel like it's a pop culture reference that it's revealing that I don't know it.
It's more of an inside joke. And it was this, I have two sons and they were pretty young. Maybe one of them was about 5 and the other was like 3. And my older son or my youngest son said to my older one, you know everything. And he said, I don't know everything. I don't know what Japanese things say. And then my youngest one said, "But you know what skeletons do." And I don't know what he meant by that, but it was such a great phrase. I had to steal it. Like,
yeah,
I know what skeletons do. So that's the story behind that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Are they grown up enough now to be embarrassed by that story, or do they think it's a charming dad story?
No, they think it's pretty funny. My youngest used to say pretty wild stuff like that all the time, but they're my oldest is just went to college, and my youngest is a junior in high school. So
congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah.
So they're happy also to be back in real school, I bet. Or not real. I don't want to say that.
Yeah.
To have returned to in-person classroom.
Right. They are. Yeah, very much so.
Did you have any summer adventures?
Yeah, let's see. We went to Mexico. That was exciting. It was kind of the thing where we just wanted to get out of town, and travel has been so limited. It was the one thing that we could do. And we had intended to take a trip the year before, and that got canceled. And so it was, basically just a very relaxing kind of resort thing. And we'd never done that before. So it was cool. Not my favorite kind of vacation. I like to actually travel around the places I go to. We were kind of stuck in that spot, but
yeah,
it was lovely. But so, yeah. How about you?
Not a lot of summer adventures. I was starting to plan to go to Mexico next month. So early this summer, I was planning a trip to Mexico. That there is the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival was doing a resort takeover.
Oh, wow.
And Nicole Byer was performing. And so a couple of my girlfriends and I were like, oh my gosh, a Nicole Byer resort takeover. That seems amazing.
Yeah.
And then the lineup came out and it was pretty bro heavy. And we were excited for a Nicole Byer weekend and not a Just for Laughs weekend.
I see. Yeah.
So you didn't do it. Yeah. So we didn't book that. And, my health has took a turn. And so I've got to be in town this winter for treatment. So
bummer. Well,
yeah.
Oh, it's next year.
Yes. But I do have, I am hopeful I have a trip to Boston planned in early February.
Oh, great.
So that is, I hope I can travel for that.
Yeah. That's a cool town.
Yeah. I've only been once and only for a couple days. So this would be to see one of my favorite comedy podcasts live.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah. So that's what I'm pinning my winter hope on. And if you can hear the rumbling in the background.
Yeah.
I've recently started putting cat toys inside of a big box, and two cats are in the box playing, and it is very funny. Two grown cats, two senior cats.
Yeah. That's funny.
It is a lot of fun. So Darren, you have this is your fifth or your sixth book just came out?
Yes, my sixth book, which
The Beast
shocking.
In Aisle 34.
Yes.
I have not read it yet because COVID ruined my reading skills. It really destroyed them. So I'm not going to pretend that I've read it, but I am obsessed with this cover.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that. I mean, the inside is pretty good too, but the cover is really, really terrific.
It's a cover that I would be intrigued.
Good. Yeah.
So tell me, was it an illustrator you knew or someone your publisher introduced you to?
No, somebody the publisher found the illustration, and we had gone through a number of different versions of the cover. I had had a friend of mine working on it. He had done a couple of my covers before. There was a holdover from that the name tag on the front cover was something we thought would be cool. And that was kept from the original design. But the main illustration was the editor's idea at Tortoise Books. And he did a great job. And there's some cool, the yellow really makes it pop. And and the back cover has a little bit of ominous blood spatter. So I thought it turned out great.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what sets this book apart from, you've got short story collections. Is this your first full length novel? No, this is your second novel.
It's my third actually.
Yep, okay, yep. Teacher's Pet is also a novel.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, so my first two books were novels, and then the next three were short story collections, and then this is my first novel in about a decade. And what sets it apart, I think it still has some of the things that I'm interested in, but this one obviously, a lot of my stuff has magical realism elements. Mm-hmm. This one's more in a kind of genre with being a werewolf novel. But I've always loved werewolf stories ever since I was a little kid. And I had this idea bouncing around for years before I actually tried to write it. And it's definitely not strictly horror. It's it leans toward comedy a lot too. So it's kind of a dark comedy horror. And, you know, hopefully it touches on a lot of real human elements as well, like identity, questions of identity, and, you know, and what am I doing in this life, and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I've talked to a number of authors recently, and I'm curious, because you're publishing it on this side, in this moment in time of the pandemic, I'm not going to say at the end of, because it's not over.
Yeah, right.
But did you do any of the revisions during COVID? Did COVID impact the final product?
Not really. It actually may have helped me get it done. And, you know, honestly, I had this other book come out that was supposed to come out in March 2020. The Big Baby Crime Spree was a collection. It was supposed to come out March 2020, but then it got bumped for obvious reasons because of the pandemic, but then it ended up coming out this year. So what I want to say is, like, last year, you know, there was probably a lot of stuff I would have done to promote that other book that I didn't get to do. And so it kind of freed me up to, I was close to the end of this one, and I really buckled down and finished it. And then we did edits. The editor really liked it. And so we did revisions up through, like, through December last year to get it ready. So it may have actually helped get this one, you know, on the way faster.
Mm-hmm. So are you doing any, like, double duty book nights where you're saying, here are my 2021 offerings?
Yeah, I'm gearing up to do my first reading, you know, in since February 2020. So there, you know, we're doing one on campus, a faculty reading. So yeah, I'll definitely be promoting The Beast in Aisle 34, but I'll also mention that other one as well, because I would love to, you know, give that one a fair shake too. So that's coming up in a couple weeks. I'm very excited about that.
I got to do my first, the event is called 20 by 2, and it's 20 people are each given 2 minutes to answer the same question.
Oh, interesting.
So it's not quite live lit, because we're not all doing, some people are doing videos, some people are doing presentations.
I see.
But that was my first time back on stage in front of a real audience since 2020. And it was, I mean, it was just like high as a kite.
It was great. Yeah, there's energy. You can't replicate it online. It's online readings are great, and they have a broad reach. That's a definite advantage. But when it comes to feeding off an audience, you just can't get that from avatars and you know.
Yeah.
Chat remarks and things like that. It's just not the same. So let's hope it stays.
Yeah. I hope we are able. I'm hopeful that we are now at a place where we understand the mitigation strategies.
Yeah, that's right.
So we can keep doing. I've got tickets to a musical in November that I would like to be able to go to. And
yeah.
friends rent opened last night in Chicago, like the 25th anniversary tour.
Oh, cool.
And so some friends went last night and I was just like, tell me everything. What was it like to be back in a theater again?
Yeah, that's good. Let's hope.
Yeah. Did you always know you wanted to be a writer?
I not consciously, but maybe unconsciously, mm-hmm. I did. I certainly valued reading my whole life, and the story I've told is that really, I mean, I always liked to read even before this time, but I remember being in seventh grade and being given an opportunity to do some kind of presentation. And I wasn't sure, I can't remember what the assignment was, but it certainly wasn't to read a whole short story aloud to the class, but that's what I did. I remember I read To Build a Fire by Jack London, because I love that story. I don't even know where I saw it first, but you know, this man versus nature kind of story, a guy out, you know, who's kind of egotistical, thinks he'll be fine, but it's like sub, you know, 100 degrees below zero, and he's got a dog with him, and he has to basically just trying to get from point A to point B, and he's never named even, he's just called the man, and mm-hmm. And, you know, spoiler alert, he ends up dying, you know, and so it's really a bleak story, but I loved it. It was so impactful to me that I read it to the class. And now I see that story. I'm like, man, that was a pretty long story for a seventh grader to read out loud. And so I was really taken by it. Once I got into that, then it was, you know, Edgar Allan Poe and mm-hmm. Camus and Shirley Jackson and, you know, Nathaniel Hawthorne, a lot of the classics and stuff like that. And so I didn't really think I'm going to be a writer, but I just knew that I loved to read and started to love to write my own stuff, but I just did it for fun. Never really shared it with anybody, but a good friend of mine, that really continued for years and years. And it wasn't until I went to, try to finish up my bachelor degree when I was 25 years old. Mm-hmm. And I had taken one creative writing class when I was 18, but after that I hadn't taken anything. And so I just decided, well, I'm going to just finish an English degree and take some creative writing. And the teachers told me, hey, you could go to grad school. Hey, you know, you might get an assistantship. And everything changed after that. And I just started writing more seriously mm-hmm. and really immersing myself in, you know, the literary world, I guess, for lack of a better word. So that's when I really decided.
Wow. That's great that you had a professor.
Yeah.
That illuminated that path for you.
Oh my goodness. I know. I'm sure I've told him before, but it's been a long time, but now I see that I try to tell students, you know, just opening the possibility that they mm-hmm. might not even know about and know that they're good at it. Just hearing that you're good at something and that there might be a path for you in that direction is so important.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it changed everything for me.
And where did you finish up your undergrad?
That was at Western Michigan University.
Okay.
Yeah.
All these Michigan schools were in my region in college, so I have vague memories of...
What region do you mean?
Great Lakes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I was a housing nerd, so I went to a lot of RA conferences and student housing conferences.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was such a world.
Yeah, it's okay.
That's cool.
Yeah. So Glacier was the Great Lakes area of college and university residence halls.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So these are all these Michigan schools you're mentioning are schools that at one time I had like t-shirts or like traded lapel pins, that sort of stuff for.
I see. Interesting. Yeah. I'm from Michigan. I've been here my whole life. I mean, it's kind of just very fluky and lucky that I ended up back here, you know, because I had a lot of jobs after grad school trying to find a permanent job. And I really just happened to land a tenure track job in Michigan, which I was really happy about.
Yeah, it is. The friends of mine who have pursued academia have gone to live in far flung
Yeah.
College towns and that I had never heard of before.
Yeah. That's what happens. You know, you have to take the jobs that you can get, and they're hard, especially in the humanities and in mm-hmm. English, they're hard to find. So
yeah. Great. So people can get the Beast in Aisle 34. It's available now. They can get it on Bookshop, which I love to link to bookshop.org because it supports independent bookstores.
Yes.
Is there a Kindle version for folks who are interested in the digital download?
Yeah. Yep. We're Kindle and paperback, and I'd love it if you check it out.
Great. So one thing that when I was getting my Horse of Many Colors, what you couldn't see that it was sitting next to is one of the things that I collect are translations of The Stranger by Camus.
Oh.
Which I mentioned only because you said Camus.
Yeah. I love that book. Yeah.
It's kind of a weird collection to get going, but
I love awesome little collections. Like I used to collect Joker cards. Just the Jokers, not decks of cards, just the Jokers. And I kind of stopped, but yeah, I had some pretty weird ones for a while there.
Nice. Yeah, this was just, the translation I started with had a foreword about how important this modern translation of it was.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's interesting. It was the first time I was 18. I hadn't thought about how the translation of a work impacts your understanding of the work.
Yeah.
You know, then I tried to find the original English translation. And then I just, as I started to travel more, realized this is a lightweight souvenir that I can probably find when I travel.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple Spanish translations. I've got two copies that I bought in Paris, one in English and one in French, and then a friend who went to China got me one in Mandarin.
Oh, wow.
So
that is cool. Well, I'll keep my eyes out, and if I ever see one, I'll pick you up one.
Yeah. So, Darren, we're not just here to talk about Jokers and
Camus
the Stranger, but also other favorite things. So what are we here to talk about tonight?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I mulled it over, and I have to say the one thing that came out on top for me was recording music.
Oh.
One of my favorite things. Yeah. I played music I still do. For many years. So I've done many, many live performances over the years in different bands and so on. But I'm specifically talking about recording music.
Okay. And is this in studio recording music you wrote yourself? Is this cover band recording? Is this you playing every instrument at a home studio and melding it together? What's your universe of recording?
It's kind of all of the above.
Okay.
I mean, most of the bands that I've been in are primarily originals.
Mm-hmm.
But I started out, really the beginning of it was a friend of mine and I who were both starting to play guitar together, when we were young teenagers. And we would just record on a boombox,
mm-hmm.
And then you'd start to think, how can I get more tracks in here, just the guitar and a guy singing live, but then we would record other things onto other tape recorders and play those with us while we were playing. So it was very primitive, like multi-tracking.
Right.
But then I got a four-track recorder, an analog, which means like a cassette tape, four-track when I was 15 or 16. And that thing was just amazing, I can't remember how much it was. It was expensive for me at the time. Mm-hmm. I saved up my paper money and bought it. And but you could multi-track. I had four channels, and you could even ping pong. It's called ping ponging. You could like record on the three tracks and then bounce them all down to the fourth one, and then add three more, and then bounce those. So you know, over the years, I've done a lot of home recording. Now it's all digital, of course, but I've also been in a number of studios as well. So from you know, kind of smaller university studios to a few bigger ones, you know, associated with record labels and stuff like that. So
when you and your friend were, recording as teenagers, were those covers or were you already dabbling in original music at the time?
Yeah, we were definitely dabbling in original music. We had songs like Big Bad Bart and Where Has Sister PV Gone? Uh-huh. There was a teacher at our school named Sister Peter Verona.
Okay.
Sister PV. It was kind of acoustic punk. You know, we listened to a lot of punk rock and, you know, Pink Floyd and the Beatles and things like that. And so it definitely mostly original.
Okay.
I'm not saying they were good, but they were original.
did you guys play out?
Eventually. We played a show in high school. There was this class that we were taking, an after school class called Music Appreciation, taught mm-hmm. by this kind of hip dude, Mr. LaValle. And he let us have like a concert at night in one of the study halls. And it had just been me and my friend up to that point. So we recruited this guy I went to grade school with who played the drums, and we just for one show and had a great time. But it wasn't like we were playing out or anything like that.
Right.
And then a few years went by and we started doing it more like freshman year of college, found a person that played bass, found a drummer, you know, then we started playing more regularly through, you know, mostly in Kalamazoo, but occasionally Grand Rapids, other places like that.
And what was that band called, in case someone's listening who was there?
Yeah. Well, I had a high school band. I guess I should say, I guess I kind of skipped a part. We did put together a band in high school named 42 Gehenna. And we did play a show that was after that high school show I was talking about. Mm-hmm. So we did play a couple. We played mostly just practice, but we did do a few shows there. I remember one was at like this bar named Froggy's for an open mic,
and I was
really scared, but it was cool. and then we went off to college. Then we started a band called King Tammy, and that band lasted in a few different with a little different lineup changes for like 8 years. And that was the primary thing that I did.
And did King Tammy go into a recording studio? Did you home record? What were some of the recording opportunities with that group?
It was a range of them, you know. So we did originally we did a couple of studio ones just to record like three or four songs, but studios always cost more money, of course. Mm-hmm. So then we found somebody who had some decent recording equipment, and we recorded at their house. And that was an album that we called Criminals Like Cheeseburgers 2. And that was a lot of fun. And then, we did another one like that. I'm trying to remember when we eventually, we did another one like that called Steel Wheels, but the Rolling Stones had an album called Steel Wheels, STEEL, but ours was STEAL, Steel Wheels. It was mm-hmm. just kind of a joke on that. We were very clever. You can tell already.
So
I'd say it's really hard. If I'd have to add them up, but really our first big one was when we drove to Minneapolis, probably 1992 or something like that. It might have been 91 to record at this studio called Amphetamine Reptile.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jordan name of that is AmRep. AmRep Studios used to be a pretty big indie music label. And yeah. They had a studio. And so we weren't on their label or anything like that, but we wanted to go outside of the local studios and try something you know, bigger. And so that was a very cool experience. It's so fun when you're there, you know, and you have this very precious time of like 2 days, you know, with just these friends, and you sleep in the same room and you hang out all day, and all you have to do is get up and go to this really cool studio, have this awesome equipment around, and just, you know, record and have these amazing sounding, you know, your own music. Yeah. Just sounds all professional and stuff like that. I love that.
And when you get, I mean, Minneapolis in the early 90s is, I mean,
yeah,
Prince obviously, but
yeah.
Now this is, I'm gonna mess it up. Are the Replacements from Minneapolis? They're Scottish. They're from Minneapolis.
No, they are. I think they are. I don't know. I've never been a huge Replacements fan. Don't hate me for that, everybody. But but I do. I think they're from there. I wanted to say there are. I don't think Chicago, but yeah, I think Minneapolis. I think that's a good guess. But well, if we get it wrong, then we'll just we'll post a huge apology.
Yeah.
I got. I probably have the internet here, but I'm not going to look it up.
I just did a quick fact check. And they are okay. Minnesota, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these cities were real hotbeds of music, including Kalamazoo. There were just a ton of really interesting bands, a diverse group of musicians. So it's a really vital time, and it was really fun to be a part of, even before Nirvana broke. It was already happening in a lot of towns. That's what a lot of people might not know about that era, is that happened to be who got huge, and a few other ones too, but it could have happened anywhere. Could have happened to any place or band, you know?
So. Yeah. I'm trying to, 91 sort of puts you like at the beginning of CDs, but early.
Yeah.
So were you pressing vinyl? Were you doing CDs? Was it cassette tape? Like, what were you doing with your masters?
We did do CDs at that point.
Yeah.
That was, and they were so new that the vinyl had like kind of gone out of favor. It's back now, you know. Even like a few years later, we recorded and pressed an album on vinyl. But yeah, it was definitely CDs at that time.
Yeah. I didn't have a car with a CD player until
the
car I have now. So
right.
So I was like, I was probably buying tapes longer than necessary.
I think a lot of us were.
Yeah.
You kind of had to, like you said, you don't have the players everywhere, and it was still fun to make mixtapes, you know, back before you could do it all, you know, digitally and stuff like that.
Oh, the only I have a box of cassette tapes, and the only tapes I have at this point are mixtapes that people have made me.
Oh.
And in my CD collection, I have almost every mix CD that I like. The mix CDs and the mixtapes are so special.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it's a kind of a its own little art form. I think it's great.
And I don't think a Spotify playlist is
It's not quite the same. Well, I know when you would make them for each other, whether it's a platonic friend or a romantic interest, you have to, the person you give it to knows that you had to sit there and think and go through stuff and actually physically, in the case of records, like find the spot on the record and put it down and wait for the exact moment and hit record.
Yep.
And hit stop at the right time. So they actually had to sit and experience every song as it happened. And you didn't just plug in, you know, titles and bam, you're done. It was an actual very hands-on, and it made it all the more, you know, meaningful, you know, to whoever you gave it to. And yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. I was going through my box of tapes. And I did start making some Spotify playlists of some of my mixtapes from college.
Oh, cool.
And it is like, there were mixtapes I made when I was studying abroad, which meant I was making tapes based on only the tapes I had taken with me.
Yeah, right.
And I think I really miss having a time-bound condensed soundtrack of a moment. And that's what like tapes and CDs and mixed CDs especially and mixed tapes gave you is like, this road trip had this music because that's what you put in the car.
That's exactly right. Like we lived in Japan for a year and just had the CDs that we brought. You know, you had to really pick and choose what you wanted to bring.
Right.
And there are still ones now. I hear them now and they bring me right back there. And it's like they're permanently tied to that experience.
Yeah.
But the recording then is, you know, I think later then, a few years later, we recorded at a studio called Noise, New Jersey, which maybe nobody's heard of, but it was, you know, another fairly big indie label. And that was another really cool experience. I think we recorded, they told us, unless they were BSing us, they told us, and I think it was true that they had the same soundboard, which is one of the big thing with all the, you know, all the different tracks and dials and, you know, whatnot that they used for Dark Side of the Moon. And so that was pretty cool. And another just really fun experience. It was in New Jersey, right across from New York City. And so the guy who ran it, his name was Kramer. Not to be confused with Seinfeld's right. Kramer, but right. he was a great bass player who played in, you know, like he was in the Butthole Surfers for a little bit and played like with Bong Water and he played in a band with Penn Jillette from Penn and Teller. So it was just cool to see this person who had all these kinds of connections and he, of course, the recording just sounded great too.
Yeah. So, and this is all King Tammy.
Yeah.
And over the years, the shape of the band kind of morphed with who was around.
Right.
What were your primary instruments? Because you do on your website list a lot of instruments.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to just try to play anything that I can get my hands on. Mm-hmm. But my first instrument was drums. I didn't really have a full set right away. So I was just playing the snare and I got kind of bored with it. And then I got a guitar when I was 14 and that's been my primary instrument. For in that band, it was definitely guitar most, but you know, you have side projects too, side groups that you're in. Like I said, there were a lot of different bands around, so there was a lot of cross-pollination. So I played bass, and I still play bass, and mandolin, and banjo, and, ukulele, and I play drums and piano, you know, as well. I've gotten a lot better at those over the years as well, so I just kind of, I tinker. So I do a lot of recording at home, and always have done recording myself too. Just like you said, playing all the instruments just for fun and that kind of stuff. But in that band, I was definitely guitar and mostly backing vocals.
Yeah. What's one of the most surprising recording sessions you've ever had? Either you didn't know it was going to happen or you were really surprised by the outcome or someone who dropped in.
That's a good question. I mean, those Noise New Jersey ones were really special as far as having access to some sweet stuff. Like there are these huge chimes that you could clang on, you know, and we added that to a song and, you know, we weren't adding a ton of weird instruments or anything like that. But for this one song, for a couple of songs, I should say, Kramer, the guy that was, he wasn't the engineer. The engineer is the guy woman sits there and, you know, does the controls and all that stuff. But Kramer was the producer. And so he would, after everything's recorded, mix it and master it. But he, you know, he volunteered to play piano on a song and he played this giant organ on a song, this church organ on a song.
Ooh.
Yeah. It sounded really cool. The same one that we added the chimes to and also played bass on a song that we weren't even planning to add bass to. And just seeing him excited by the chord progressions and stuff, it was very flattering. And you know, that was really cool and unexpected. And I also, I guess I would also have to say, King Tammy has been non-existent for a while now, but I have been playing in a faculty band here at Central with me and two other poets here, and we recorded an album, and I just had a great time. That it was in the studios here at Central Michigan, and the guy who engineered it just did such an amazing job, and I think that was surprising. Just his level of detail, attention to detail was so great. And we ended up adding lots of, you know, multi-tracking vocals and sounds and stuff like that. That just, that's what I really love is when you go in, you have like a blueprint of what you want, but then, it becomes a collaboration, and just exceeds everything you think it's going to be.
Yeah. Was that a music professor who was your engineer, or was it a student, or just?
Yeah, I was a grad student. Yeah, which was so great. He just had such a great ear and kind of even talked about things that I don't remember any other engineers talking about, like balancing out, you know, frequencies, having things with different, you know, not having everything with certain low end frequencies versus high end. I mean, that sounds, you know, basically intuitive, but I've never had anybody talk about that before.
Right.
You know? And so that was kind of, that was just really neat. And we would come in there and he would like have other songs, like, you know, songs that, you know, famous songs, and say like, mm-hmm. you know, what if we made it kind of sound like this, you know, as far as the atmosphere of it or the tone yeah. of it, things like that. And I just, it's so cool when somebody else is bringing ideas to the table like that.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just like punching their time card and hitting record.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And going like, okay, I got the recording, now go. But he was truly, you know, he truly seemed to care and not only cared, but wanted to contribute. And so that was, it's so important because, like I can record stuff at home and I can record on my garage band, mm-hmm. but I'm not a music engineer, you know, and
yeah.
I'm not trained in that same way. And so to have that is exactly what I love about it.
Mm. Yeah. I went to my undergrad was at Millikan University in Illinois, and they had a big music business department.
Oh.
That now is headed by Martin Atkins from PIL, the drummer from PIL.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Face. I was going to say that name is familiar. Yeah. Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. I met him in a previous life when I used to teach social media to rabbis and rock stars.
Oh.
And he wow. was my he was my gateway to musicians.
Oh.
Martin was. And now he's teaching at my alma mater. And it's really it's just something else to see what people, you know, it's like sommeliers who can taste everything that's in a wine. You just train one of your senses and to be able to have an ear that is trained in that way that, and that you can translate from one thing to another, how to like apply it, I think is such an incredible skill.
It absolutely is. That's a great analogy. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And it's stuff that, you know, you can be a great musician, but you might not have any kind of concept of that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. that's where it's terrific to have that input. That's why I like, you know, the Beatles have always been one of my favorite bands. And, you know, I know the Beatles have been talked to death, but you can't understate just how important it was when they decided to go only to the studio. They stopped touring. They decided just to be a studio band.
Mm-hmm.
And George Martin was this amazing influence on them who just did exactly that. Like, you know, brought them things they had no idea about. And you know, I'm not super, you know, like I don't dig into all the history of every song they recorded, but the ones that I've heard, are just really interestingly experimental and, you know, are just this amazing collaboration that created these pieces. So,
yeah, I had someone on Nick Crafting on to talk about the Beatles, and he brought that up, that George, the engineer,
Martin, yep.
That like John Lennon could say, just like explain it or sing it. Like he could explain it and George could interpret it in a way that seemed magical.
Yes. Yeah. That sounds what I've heard too. Yeah. Like what I've heard too. And he would just like a song like In My Life. Do you know that one? There are places I remember, you know, very straightforward song. There's, you know, it sounds not experimental at all, but George Martin wrote the piano part that there's a piano solo in that, but it's not just the piano solo. It was recorded at a slower speed. So when they play it back, it's sped up and so it sounds like a harpsichord. And you know, I didn't know that for years and years. I just, you know, then when I heard that, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Cause there's something about it. It just sounds a little, not like a straightforward piano.
Yeah.
These little sly, experimental gestures that I think, you know, were his idea. And he certainly wrote that solo. And I'm not taking anything away from the Beatles, but
they
it's just
okay.
That, it's that
they did some things. All
right. Yeah, right.
They had some songs. They did some things.
But you do see if they didn't have him as a producer, you could imagine it being a really different, band, you know, just not be the same. And so stuff like that, I envy that they just, all they had to do is show up and be in a studio all the time and could just mess around whatever and do whatever they wanted. That was always kind of my dream job, you know, but of course not just everybody gets to do that.
So. No. Some people have to be professors and write.
That's right. Yes, exactly. I'll take it.
I'll take it. Now, when you travel, are you someone who'll go and take a tour of if you were going to Nashville, would you try and do a tour of a studio or do you only go in when you've got recording booked?
Yeah, I think I would only go in if I had it. I mean, I would just be, you know, chomping at the bit if I actually went in and had to just look at it, you know what
right.
I mean? Like I'm not gaga over it unless I can, but if I can sit in, there's some kind of magic that I feel in places like that for sure. But, you know, if I can't I'd want to sit down and be like, let me just put down a quick track, you know.
I just got a little something.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel lucky that I've been able to be in some of these top of line ones, as well as just people's basements. And, and that also has a certain huge charm to it as well.
Yeah.
So it's so cool nowadays that, you know, people like Billie Eilish, you know, are recording just in their bedroom, you know, and that it's amazing to have that technology available.
Yeah. I'm the immediate past president of my synagogue. And one of the things I wound up doing a lot of was recording our video, editing audio. And something I never mastered was like the acapella video or layering, like this person played guitar and they sent me the video or they sent me the sound and this person did the drums and these two people did audio. So I'm curious if you did any remote recording sessions over COVID.
We started doing that. I have this like side band, whatever, it was called Loop de Loop, and we had done that. I've done that for, you know, not almost as many years as King Tammy had been around, but this one has continued, and in part it's continued because we have been able to do some remote stuff. And because I was living out of Michigan for a number of years, and you know, the other guys would get together and record something, and then I could add a piano track, and just, so you know, I'm not, it's really a friend of mine who handles the high end recording stuff, but I can do enough that I have enough experience from when I did those old 4-track recordings at home.
Right.
That I know how to multi-track. I know how to, and GarageBand is pretty simple. I just try to keep it simple. And yeah, it's great. We've started doing some new stuff recently, and it's just a whole lot of fun because, you know, somebody can just record a guitar and a vocal and say, add some stuff to this. And
yeah.
People add harmony, people add whatever. And you can build a song from a long way away. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I have a friend who her performing persona is the Klingon pop warrior.
Wow. That's awesome.
She translates, well, pop song. It is exactly what it sounds like.
I was trying to say.
It's okay. Klingon. Great.
Yeah.
Pop songs, and she dresses like a Klingon warrior.
Oh my gosh. So she sings pop songs in Klingon.
Yes.
That is amazing.
Wow. And she she was a musical theater person at Millikan who did improv and eventually made her way around to Klingon, and she does her own translations.
Wow.
And her recording, like, she'll sing the song and then she'll send it off to the people collaborating and they'll just build on it in the creative brief of what a Klingon band would sound like.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Yeah. And that was from her was how I learned about, I had never considered before that you might record remotely and not even all have sheet music in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never used sheet music in my life. I mean, there's different kinds of musicians out there. And, you know, I'm definitely a play by the ear. I've tried to learn it. It's just not in my DNA to learn sheet music. Just give me the chords and I'll figure something out. Or I'll figure out the chords. But that sounds amazing. I mean, on so many levels. The fact that there's enough... The Klingon is a robust enough language that you can do all these colloquial, songs. That's crazy.
She's done now 4 EPs.
Wow.
Yeah.
And those are available?
They are. Yeah.
What is the name of the act again?
Klingon Pop Warrior.
Klingon Pop Warrior. All right. I'm going to write that down. That's pretty cool. That's a Chicago person?
She's in Chicago, yeah. And she travels to Star Trek events.
She teleport there?
She teleports there, yeah. Yep.
Good.
She's reached that level of fandom where they gave her the technology that they have withheld from everyone else.
I knew it.
Yeah. It turns out Owner's Guide for Teleportation was in Klingon.
That's all we knew. We should have all been studying Klingon.
Yeah, the whole time.
The joke's on us. Yeah.
Yeah. So what is your band with the other professors?
Oh, thanks for asking. We are called Daryl and the Beans. it's kind of a long story. Not that long, but it was suggested by a student. It's me and Robert Fanning and Jeffrey Bean. And so his last name is Bean. And a lot of people mistakenly call me Daryl. My name's Darren Doyle. And that maybe it confuses people. So somebody suggested calling us Daryl and the Beans. And so that just makes it even more confusing to people.
Right.
But yeah, that's the name. And we don't play, we're all fairly busy with our teaching jobs, but we try to play at least a few times a year live. And we did record that album. It's called Burning the Eagle. And it's out there on Bandcamp. And if anybody wanted to pick up a copy of it, all the proceeds go toward a creative writing award in our English department. So, you know, we don't make any money off of this. So it's for a good cause. And yeah, we play a lot of, it's kind of acoustic based, three-part harmonies, more covers, but we do like unique versions of cover songs. We do like a acoustic metal version of our CMU's alma mater song.
Nice.
That you must check out. It sounds very gothic and very, grandiose and, things like that. And yeah, we played for 1,000 people when we opened up for Jeff Daniels. Yeah, a couple of years ago. So that was probably the biggest show we've ever had. And that was a lot of fun. And yeah, we played a couple of the summer concert series here in Mount Pleasant. But we're really itching to get back and doing some live shows because it's been a while. And it's a lot of fun.
Has there been an all professor battle of the bands yet? Are you guys facing off against chemistry or?
I wish there are no other ones. We're the only ones.
How is it possible?
We could have one and just destroy all the non-existent competition. Yeah, no, I'm shocked too. I don't know. It's but we've got the market on that. Mm-hmm. Right now. Yeah. But we do some originals as well. You know, I've worked in some a couple of loop-de-loop songs from that other band, you know, that fit well with this one. So mm-hmm. We're trying to actually expand into doing more originals, but people like to hear the covers too. So
yeah,
you know, you gotta try to do both.
And do your sons ever play with you? Are they into music?
Oh, thanks for asking that. Yeah, they are very into music. We used to, you know, they did like the School of Rock, you know.
Yep.
And so both of them play drums and keyboards. My one son did tinker with the guitar a little bit, but not that much.
Mm-hmm.
When they were younger, I would play with them. We definitely had, you know, 7 or 8 songs that we would play in the basement. That was a lot of fun. But we hadn't done that in a while. My one son is really my oldest son is just they're both good, but he's a spectacular drummer, and mm-hmm. I don't even know how he did it, how he learned it. I mean, because it wasn't like the School of Rock songs were playing like he plays. He loves video game music, and there is such a huge. I feel like it's a whole genre unto itself. Yeah. And there's some amazing music that he's played for me. And he plays along with that. And it's just fast and precise and like bizarre time signatures. And it's very impressive. And so they both continue to do their thing. You know, he also loves to record music. He'll like program the notes. He does a different kind of recording on like Fruit Loops, I think it's called FL Studio. Yeah, it's called FL Studio Fruit Loops.
Huh.
And it's not so much, he doesn't like plug in a microphone and, you know, play some drums. He programs, you know, it's not sampling, it's programming, you know, a violin sound to mm-hmm. play these particular notes and stuff like that. And he comes up with amazing stuff, and it's kind of, that's a type of recording I don't know anything about, but it's pretty impressive.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. I'm happy. At least I did enough to, you know, they had guitars and piano and drums mm-hmm. in this house their whole lives. And it took them a little while, you know, for a while there, they just didn't give a crap. It must have been like, this is dad's thing,
right?
And eventually they came around to it, and they both do it, and that's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, my twin sister just got a drum set.
Oh, cool.
Started taking drum lessons from someone we went to school with, and they do it on FaceTime.
Oh wow. Yeah.
And they like her husband plays bass and her her sons both have instruments. And so she was trying to figure out, like, you know, we played wind instruments in high school, which isn't necessarily a family jam band instrument.
Right.
So she wanted to be loud and take more space. And so she got a drum set for her wedding anniversary. And it's so cool. Oh, so now they're all learning. She takes the lessons and then she teaches her sons the next night. So everybody's learning drums. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very cool. Wow. Yeah, that's fun. And you said they FaceTime?
Yeah, they do FaceTime for the lesson.
Oh, for the lesson. Yeah.
For the lesson. Gotcha.
I'd not like their band doesn't do it in FaceTime.
No.
Gotcha. Yeah. I was taking drum lessons there for a little bit too, during COVID, just because I've always wanted to get back and take some lessons just for the hell of it. And yeah, that works. You know, it's a good, you can actually pull it off with that kind of format. So
I just did an interview with an author who is also a voice teacher. So she would play the piano and over a Zoom lesson. And they kind of like all learned the rhythms and the sound delay to make it work.
Ah.
And she said that when she got back to teaching in-person lessons, her brain had reprogrammed and she was constantly half a beat behind.
Oh my gosh.
Her student, and they had to stop and restart so she could play the in-person actually playing together rhythm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's wild. Yeah, because there, I was going to say, we've not figured out a way to do it remotely because there's this weird lag. And wow, that's that's good. Yeah. That you can do it, can, you know. But that's very interesting.
Let's say that you were doing a tour of your dream studio with a band from any era, and they would invite you to drop in.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
This can be the Beatles at Abbey Road. This can be Prince. This can be, those are obviously the bands I know. This could be Nirvana.
right.
Sub Pop Records, right? Like, what is band and a studio that you wish you could like drop in and jam with?
Well, you know, obviously to me, the Beatles are kind of the gold standard. But I would say a close second to me is Pink Floyd. Yeah, they, you know, kind of depending on which era you pick, it would be a very different experience.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you know much about them, but their early days with Syd Barrett, probably very different than the later days with like the Wall album. But yeah, there was like the album Umaguma, I don't know exactly how you say it, but that album where that it's just really experimental. It's after Syd Barrett, it's before like Wish You Were Here and before Dark Side of the Moon. It's just, you know, where like one whole side is, you know, basically Roger Waters songs that are totally wacko. And I think that would be, you know, that'd be my ideal, because that's when they're most free, you know, they're most, you know, like just do whatever you want, you know.
Yeah.
There's no huge expectations. Like even the Beatles had a lot of freedom for a huge band like that. Good grief. They could do whatever they wanted. But, you know, I think the Beatles freed up a lot of people. And so, you know, to do even more. And I think Pink Floyd was kind of one of the ones that was able to take advantage of that newfound freedom and just say like, we'll do whatever the hell we want. We're going to, I don't know if you've ever heard that song, several species of small furry animals gathered together in a cave and grooving with a Pict, that is on Umaguma. But if you ever, play this back, look up that title on YouTube, several species of small furry animals gathered together in a cave and grooving with a Pict, a P-I-C-T. You'll see what I mean. It's pretty wild.
I'm certain I have heard it.
You maybe have. Yeah. It's really just like voices and chatter and it's not really instruments at all, but yeah, you probably heard it. And just a lot of them on that album are just, it's just all over the place. And I love that.
Yeah. Here, I'm going to share my screen. Share sound. I'm going to see if I have this memory hiding anywhere.
And then we got to sit through this.
This is how they get you to pay for the free.
Yeah, exactly. Takes a little to get going. Need patience.
Okay.
You can skip ahead about a minute. There, it's starting to get going.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
If I
yeah.
What?
Starts to get pretty crazy.
I take it back. I don't think I have heard this before.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
I was, if I've heard it before, which is possible because my brother sure. was a huge Pink Floyd fan and our heater vents were connected. So I absorbed a lot of Pink Floyd growing up.
That's cool.
But I have never heard this in stereo in like,
yeah,
you know, I wear like big over the ear headphones.
Uh-huh.
And mostly I just listen to podcasts. Like I don't listen to things in stereo very often anymore. And that was like having my eardrums tickled. It was so weird.
Yeah, it's that I agree. And that's after they had already done like, you know, Top of the Pops and, you know,
right.
Done whatever that the band shoot why
American Bandstand.
Yeah, exactly, with Syd Barrett. So this is like they're a known quantity at this point, and then they come out with this stuff. It's just like I love that kind of freedom, and you can hate the song, but you can't hate the joy that they probably had in making it and just the pushing the envelope, you know.
Yeah, November 1969.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's also interesting the cover of that album is a repeating picture with each of the members of Pink Floyd in a
they're
each
position.
Sitting in an identical place, but they keep changing they're like rotating through them.
Right.
And like this infinite mirror situation.
Right. Yeah, it's a really cool cover.
Yeah. I'll have to see if my brother will come on and talk about Pink Floyd.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Let me know. And I'll tune in for that for sure.
It's not his favorite anymore, but he might be willing to talk about it.
Yeah.
Darren, is there anything about recording that I didn't ask you?
No, I don't think so. We've covered a lot.
Okay. What's your home setup? GarageBand and...
Yeah, I use GarageBand. I have a Snowball mic I stick it in front of an amp and, you know, I'm pretty lo-fi still. I stick in front of an amp or stick in front of the piano and go to town. And then hopefully like if I'm, you know, sending it to my friend, he can clean it up a bit and that sort of thing. So when I record at home myself, I'm just doing it for fun and doing it for me. So I'm not even that concerned with perfection doesn't interest me at all. So
do you want people to be able to find you on the internet?
That would be great. My books and stories, a lot of them can be found on www.darrindoyle.com, darrindoyle.com. And I'm on Twitter at Darren Doyle. And, or is it at Doyle Darren? I can't remember.
Doyle Darren.
I'm sure, Doyle Darren said, thank you. And I'm on Instagram. I have an author page on Facebook, but truthfully, I don't use it that much. Mm-hmm. But really, yeah, the website is a good place to find me.
Great. Well, thank you so much for spending, at least in Chicago, a rainy evening. I don't know if this weather has gotten to you yet.
It's been rainy for days. And so it's off and on. It's gloomy, but this makes it all better. It's been really fun to talk to you. I appreciate your questions and your enthusiasm. And yeah, I'm very impressed. I'm impressed that you can talk about any subject that gets sprung on you at the last second.
That's impressive. Only been a couple that have been really difficult. I find actually, because the most part you're asking someone about what they love.
Yeah.
And it is often a subject that people don't give us time to talk about, right?
Right. Yep.
You get interviewed about your career.
Yeah.
You might get asked like what your love story is. But as far as like getting to like really nerd out on like a hobby or an interest.
Yeah.
Like we're just not given space to do that.
That's so cool. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.